The 1950s, America and Korea were at war. The space race took off with the launch of Sputnik. The Cold War was heating up, and comic books came under fire. With the threat of nuclear attack came the concern of radiation and its effect on life. Fears of a communist invasion, technological advances, and creatures from beyond our moon spread across the country. But worry not, my friends, for you are safe in the spoiler room with the crew. So grab your favorite drink and pull up a chair as they discuss monster films from this decade in
It Came From the 50s.
My friends, welcome once again to the spoiler room. We've locked ourselves in the room, pulled up the chair, and tonight it is another It Came From the 50s special. We meant to get this at the end of July, our insect month, but we're just a little bit late with the episode, but I wanted to do this movie. It was great to see it get voted on, and everybody wanted to talk about it, and tonight I got a great crew to discuss this 1958 film starring Mr. Vincent Price. First off, we have back in the spoiler room, it is the lovely Andrew Shearer. Hello, Andrew, how are you?
Hey, what's up, man? Hey, couldn't miss a chance to talk about a 50s movie involving integration that has no black people in it.
Oh, that's why I love you, Andrew.
Aren't the 50s great?
The 50s were something, that's for sure. And next to Mr. Gunsorific, it is the Bowtie Man himself. It is Paul Salzer. He is back with us. Hello, Paul.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. Are you ready to talk about The Fly?
I am. I do apologize. I think I have a ruptured eardrum. So
what?
Yeah. Seriously? I have. Yeah. It feels like I'm underwater all the time. And it happened like a few weeks ago. And so I've been suffering through this. It's supposed to heal up pretty soon, but.
Paul, man, thanks for doing this, homie.
Yeah. I can't try to keep my shit
cool. Okay.
Hopefully that heals up for you.
I won't say anything funny, so you're okay there.
We won't scream in your ear and do the death metal version of the Fly song. So you should be good.
Thank you.
We won't play the noise of the teleporter, Jesus.
Yes.
Teleporter. Thank you.
Oof. And next to the Bowtie Man himself, he's back with us in the spoiler room. It is Baby Spice himself, Scotty D. Hello, Scotty D. How are you, sir? Welcome back.
Well, can I say, a man will beg, a man will crawl on the sheer face of love like a fly on the wall.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
And he used my last name, too, so rock and roll.
There you go. And so tonight, yes, we have The Fly from 1958 starring Mr. Vincent Price. And Scotty D, do you want to give the summary of this film?
Yeah.
You said you watched it. You've watched it a number of times. So.
I've watched it a number of times. Yes, I did. Just not recently. But yes, it's kind of weird. It's done pretty much in flashback, if I recall.
Mm-hmm.
After the death of this scientist, and he's trying to do these experiments, basically, and they're trying to investigate what could have happened to him. How could he have met such a horrible demise? And it turns out that he had his genes spliced with that of a fly in this teleporter, and I don't know, I'm fucked it up. So, but it's
no, you're close.
So as they're investigating it, they discover this. She starts spinning this story that just seems too outlandish to be possibly true. That her husband would suddenly became a guy with a fly head, and she keeps on looking, and she is obsessed with this, and she is obsessed with finding the missing fly that she assumes will be flying around with the visage of her husband.
Yes. Oh, man. This film is considered in horror circles a classic. And I'll be interested to see the opinions of the folks of this film. We'll go around right now and get initial feelings with The Fly. And Paul, let's start with you and The Fly. You remember when you first saw it and your kind of initial feeling with this movie?
I did like this movie. However, I did like Cronenberg's remake a lot better. I thought it was much more intimate than this one. But this one definitely has the classic sci-fi feel to it, and it makes this film enduring. So it is worth a watch.
Now, have you watched it before you watching it for the podcast, or?
Oh, no, I've seen it before. And of course, you know, you get all of those nice, like, throwback type things from the 50s kind of science fiction thing, the creature science, you know, science gone wrong, that sort of stuff. So all those elements are there. But again, the modern retelling, I thought like the 80s version of it to me was a much more intimate thing. This just kind of felt like I was reading, basically a novel or, you know, basically like a science fiction story. It actually felt like I was reading a story rather than watching it. So
those damn dirty scientists in the 50s, I tell you, they made the H-bomb and now they're playing with genes and teleportation. Oh,
well, I mean, it's for the betterment of mankind, but they don't understand that there are certain things that you're not supposed to mess with, you know, and
they were so.
But honestly, now that Andrew mentioned the whole integration and all of that stuff, I like that theme better. And I'm gonna, I'd rather rethink this film as that, because it does make more sense and it makes it a much more appealing film based on that theme. So thank you, Andrew.
I was just fucking with it because the 50s are racist, but
oh, so you were kidding? Okay, but it was honestly a great thought, and I'm gonna go with that. I love that.
Your scientists were thinking and focused so much on whether or not they could do something that they didn't think about whether or not they should.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow, you are mixing up Goldblum scientists.
I know. right pew, wrong church. No. And Scotty D, I know you didn't watch it recently, but do you remember when you first watched this film?
Oh, yeah. I first saw it in pieces when I was a kid. I saw the first bit. I saw the ending, basically. I was waiting for something else to come on, and I saw the famous ending of this film. You know, help me! You know, the famous scene. And it gave me nightmares because I was a little kid at the time, and I got lots of things gave me nightmares. And so I was like, oh. And, of course, then they ran it again. They ran this movie a lot when I was a kid. They ran it on another one, and I kind of got to sit down with it a little more. And I've always kind of liked this. You know, there's always the comparisons, Paul, you were mentioning, like, with the remake and everything. Mm-hmm. I don't often compare the two because they are so different.
Yes.
Just in tone and in what they're saying and what they're talking about. Everything is so different that I think that he just basically, Cronenberg just basically used the basic premise as a jumping off point to explore his own thing. But, I've always really liked this movie, how it just really feels, it starts out almost like an Agatha Christie type or, of Hercule Poirot thing where Vincent Price is in there, and but they're all trying to investigate and see what happened, and there's this room, this house that's like just sealed off. It feels very, it's kind of stuffy and everything. I like how stuffy this movie feels. And it's got this big wide screen because 20th Century Fox used to insist on it, but it always feels like this really kind of like stuffy, almost murder mystery. And then you realize just how weird this movie's getting. I really like this movie a lot.
Awesome. And Andrew, how about you, sir? You remember when you first watched this and your initial feelings with this film?
Yeah. I mean, since I was a kid, I saw it when I was a kid, and I hadn't watched it again until this week.
Really?
The ones I tend to watch more. Return of the Fly, I like a little bit more, but Curse of the Fly, I love. Like, that's
Thank
the Fly
you. Movie that
I actually watched the most, but it was, like, super hard to find up until about 10 years ago. But, yeah, when I was a kid, like, the new Fly was out. Like, I remember my dad just went apeshit over the new Fly, and he always wanted me to watch horror movies with him, but I was still way too scared, and he's like, alright, pussy, well, why don't you watch the old one? It's in black and white. And so, you know, of course, he told me how funny it was going to be and all that shit, so I wouldn't be scared of it. And, you know, he told me the end about that voice and everything, and he just thought it was hysterical. But yeah, I you know what I like, man? The little kid in this was in the same kid from 13 Ghosts. And when I was watching, I'm like, what's he from? I know this kid. I know this kid. He's from 13. What Pops used to do, he never read me stories out of book. He would always describe to me old-ass movies he saw when he was a kid or old-ass EC Comics story that he saw or Twilight Zones. Like, that's what he would do. And so The Fly was one of the ones that I actually liked to hear. Mom read me out of books that my grandma would do, but Dad would just tell me The Fly and shit. So, it don't have enough Vincent Price in it.
No.
But it's got some surprising gore. So, yeah, it's actually, I feel like in hindsight, it's probably a little bit better than the second Fly, actually, in some ways. But yeah, Curse of Fly is still my favorite, though. And the remake's all right. You know, all remakes are bad, so.
Just an instant, if it says remake, it's going to be
bad.
Yeah,
it should have never been made, but, you know, that's another.
No, it's just shitting on my childhood.
Terrible.
Just imagine, you know, if the internet were a lot around in 1986, would there have been all these people who, like, grew up in the 50s and everything like that saying that, you know, they'd gone through Vietnam, they'd gone through the JFK assassination, they'd gone through the civil rights struggle, but this is what was going to rape their childhood.
You never heard that stuff. But like I was saying, Dad loved that remake. He loved that Night of the Living Dead remake. He was all about, like, his favorite story is getting new special effects, and she, you know, it's all about it.
I'm fine with it. We're talking about Cronenberg. I can't wait for the new Rabbit. New Rabbit's gonna be awesome. Saskas are doing it. I think Tanya's actually on it somehow.
I'm stoked about it, man. I love Rabbit's such a cool. Yeah.
Rabbit's a cool story, and Rabbit is one though that much like The Fly, you know, it's one you can remake. There's certain ones, especially in the genre films, that you can get away with remaking it, and the fans just won't let it go. But you're like, no, but they actually added something. I mean, Cronenberg's The Fly, like you guys mentioned, he took a different approach to it. Whereas this one from the 1958, this is almost like two separate movies.
Hey, some movies don't turn incredible classic until they get remade. Then all of a sudden, you know what I'm saying? But I think Rabid, not to get too off track, they could make a different sequel like every year, like The Purge, and have the teeth come out from somewhere else on the body, and I go see it.
Oh yeah!
Oh, definitely.
It's like, which one was that—the big toe tooth, or is that eye tooth? I don't know.
I just can't wait for Rabid 3. Get ready for butt stuff.
Hey, who did it first, though? Who did it first?
Who did it first?
Who had the vampire ass first?
Yes. Yes. That's, all right. That's because you're an innovator.
I didn't say they shouldn't give you royalties.
All I want is a free Blizzard of the Month. That's all.
So with The Fly, though, as I mentioned, I felt like this was going to be almost felt like two separate movies. In the beginning, we get a murder mystery where we've got Vincent Price and his sister-in-law she says, oh, I murdered your brother. And you come to find out he's in love with her, and there's this kind of odd love triangle thing going on between them and everything. And then we get into the major flashback as she's recounting her story, and we just get this batshit crazy sci-fi film with a guy with a bug head and an arm and trying to type. And it's like almost two separate films that they had in this movie, which surprised me. Now, it had been a long time since I watched this film, so it was almost new to me watching it. I seen bits and pieces, and of course the immortal final scene. But for me, you know, I was digging it, the murder mystery part, and Patricia Owens, yeah, you know, I was digging her parts, but.
What parts?
Scenes. Pardon me, that was a Freudian slip there.
Okay.
But it was interesting because it is the 50s, as Andrew Besson, you know, mentioned. And, there's a lack of diversity in this film, but also it gives you the impression of their view on women in this film. Andrew, how the female is immediately perceived as just hysterical and, oh, she couldn't have killed him. She couldn't have operated the machine. How'd you feel about that? What'd you think about that kind of theme that felt like I felt was running through at least the beginning part of this film that, you know, women are just crazy.
I mean, it's bullshit, right? I mean, they, but they're, you know, they don't believe her either, which is a thing, right?
You know, she came right out and tells them and they still don't believe her.
Nah, a guy named Francois who wears a jacket, red velvet jacket to smoke, don't even believe her. You know, you can't convince Francois smoking jacket. You know, you're fucked up.
You know, and it like, wow, if this isn't a great example of the perception of, you know, females in the 50s, no one believes her. They're, you know, and then she starts talking about the fly too. And Francois, Vincent Price's character, lies to her, says, oh no, I have it. Sure.
Bullshit. Okay. And you know, they blame the whole thing on her too, you know? They're like, oh, he caught the fly that was supposed to save everything, but I told him to let it go. You bitch! And then later, it's like she's trying to catch the fly, and then she lets it out the window or whatever. You motherfucker! Like, how much are we going to demonize this lady? And I think in the original story, she kills herself to top everything off.
Does she really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she's dead in the beginning of part two anyways. But, like, yeah, I think in the original short story or whatever, she at that, you know, to end all things, she kills herself, you know.
Wow. And Scotty D, would you say that this kind of gives you a window of perception of females in the 50s?
Yeah, and I don't think they were trying to make a commentary or anything like that. I think that actually they thought they were probably being about as progressive as they could, because she is the, you know, aside from one dude who throws a rock, you know, she's the one person who does everything in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, the whole movie hinges on her saying, yes, I did the thing, and everybody else saying, bullshit, you didn't do the thing, and they're just later on like, oh, she did the thing. So, but because, you know, they would not, like you were saying, they blamed it on hysteria, they blamed it on this and that, and you know, it's... So they had this idea about what women, so she's the only one who did anything, so I think they wound up saying more about it, but unintentionally, because right. What they're doing is, they're not making a commentary about about women's roles, in the 1950s. They were just showing women's roles in the 1950s because it was the 1950s.
Well, that's what I mean. It gives you a window. I wasn't sure.
But it gives, no. And I don't think you were saying that either. It definitely lets you peer in and everything like that. I'm not going to be one of these people who sits down and says, well, that is just typical. Because again, you got to be like, we've come a ways, you know, we've got a long ways to go, but we've come a ways, you know, from that.
I got a question for Paul. Paul, I have discovered you got a sort of a sick sense of humor throughout being on several of these episodes. You hope you don't mind me saying.
Okay.
So like in the part where it shows her, like, you know, he puts his head in his hand under this hydraulic press to squish him, like, you know, squish the bug or whatever. She's got to be the one to press the button. She's got to like hardcore up to do it.
Yeah.
But she ends up having to do it twice because his arm had slid out and it's the fly arm, right? Tell me this, were you thinking how funny it would be if the arm kept slipping out and she kept having to go back and do it?
That would have been awesome. No, that would be awesome.
Damn it, I said I wouldn't say anything funny. I'm sorry, Paul. I just had to know. Were you thinking that?
I wasn't until you brought it up, but it would be awesome if they did that because it would have added a little bit of levity to the whole situation.
I think I heard a knee slap there, guys. Just, you know, just like every time she walks back, like, I can do this. The arm flap. Just every time.
Of course, modern society would be like, oh, see, they're just being insulting, saying that she can't do a simple thing like push a button and smash an arm.
She can't kill someone correctly the first time. Damn.
All the mother dudes would have threw up as soon as they saw it, man.
She hardcore presses that button, too. I mean, she's like.
Did it twice, man. Twice.
Yeah.
Well, she thought about it. I mean, she thought ahead of time. You know, that's what I love about that scene where they reveal that she did actually, you know, squish the guy, which, yes, this is in a press, folks. So there was nothing left of this. I mean, there was barely any liquid left, you know. But she thought ahead of time going, oh, I got to squish the arm. So she goes back, puts the arm under and squishes it. I'm like, damn, that's actually, you know.
She just turns her head a little bit. Yeah, she just kind of goes,
It is a great touch. Yeah,
it's touch because it's taking something that is cathartic and then it's adding like the punishment of the mundane. Oh no, your chore is not done yet. You don't get to just flee the room. You have to like actually finish this job, as annoying and as painful as it is, even though you've just basically murdered your husband, you know. Yeah. I mean, but just adds this odd tone to the whole thing that I just thought was so clever. Yeah.
They still needed to do that as a plot point, though, because if you knew right away if she had done the smashing with the one attempt, they would have said, "Oh, it's not her; it's suicide." But because there was a second one, it's like, no, he didn't get out of the press and push the button again. So they needed that second one in there as a plot device type of thing.
Yeah, it's a good thing his big toe wasn't also a fly.
Yeah. Just
how much can I get the leg?
he was under there and he was like, "Help me! Help me!" Push the button.
He wasn't saying shit, man. He was squish. Wafer thin. well, what'd you think of that, Paul? Though with her character, though, I mean, it gives you a window into what they thought of women, but also guys, because they were having a hard time believing that he would commit suicide.
Like, yeah,
a guy can't commit suicide. Did you get that vibe as well? What'd you feel about how they kind of portrayed her? I mean, a window into the 50s for their perception on women.
It was a window into that, and the whole idea that he was a respectable scientist kind of added to that whole thing that he wouldn't have killed himself. Why would he? He's got this lovely wife. He's got a lovely kid. He's got, you know, this big house that's so massively huge, you know. Why would he kill himself? Why would he want to kill himself, you know, and so forth. And so the whole idea that there were some scenes, though, where she actually did show a more aggressiveness to herself. The whole thing about her deciding to put the hand in again and pushing it. She was smart enough to know that she needed to get rid of all the evidence. And there was also a couple scenes in there where she wasn't going to take Andre's crap. You know, he basically wanted to push her completely away, but he needed her for little things and that, but she kept at it. You know, I'm taking the dinner down to you, and I'm going to check in on you, and I'm going to try to convince you to take off that thing. And even though when you finally did, I screamed and fainted. And
I got a question about the dinner.
Sure, is that cool? Ahead,
can I ask a question about dinner? Yeah. How come he didn't order a plate of shit?
Because his mind wasn't quite the fly yet.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what would a fly want to eat? I mean, he's talking about, oh, bring me milk with bourbon in it. Fuck that. A fly would eat turds. Like, bring me a turd. Just
bring me a turd. A worm.
Bring me some hot links right now.
Just like, honey, I'm going to ask you to do a favor for me.
Oh!
It's 1958, not 68. 68, you would ask her to drop
Danny Thomas is around in the 50s.
Yeah,
it's like everything else in this movie seems so scientifically plausible, except for that. I'm like, he's over here eating a steak, and I'm like, no, you would not eat no steak. You don't even play like you don't want a turd. just gonna be funny. You're like, yeah, nonverbal writing doo doo on the chalkboard.
Dude.
I don't understand. Just come on. It's like my number two request right now. God. Kill me and then give me doo. Not in that order. My last meal.
See, it's not D-O-D-O. It's D, yes. Subset zero, not.
Yeah, right. Oh, Paul, that was so good what you just did. I'm not trying to derail this into all lowbrow, but he brought that food up, and that was like my main. Yeah. I'm sorry, my main question while I'm looking at the movie. Why? God, come on. What do flies eat? Everybody knows what flies eat. Dookie.
It threw me off when he said milk and bourbon. I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, oh, okay, you know, I guess, sure. Though I did like the sound effect they had for when he did eat. They made that sound pretty disgusting.
It was gross. The movie was gross. Yeah, it was grosser than I remembered it being. I didn't remember it even being in color. So yeah, how much I've watched the other ones.
Go ahead, Paul.
The last time I saw it was in color. So did they colorize it then?
No, it's just always been in color. But
it's always been in color.
The sequels were in black and white, though.
Oh, okay.
They're little
that's
bit cheaper,
confusing, isn't it?
It's a little bit cheaper to produce.
Oh, yeah. The sequels are very cheap. Yeah.
They're still in CinemaScope, but they're not in color.
Yeah.
Oddly enough,
on Prime, Curse Bad Blood is not in CinemaScope. It looks fucked up.
The thing that really bothered me the most was the cat. I don't know why. The fact that it was like atomized cat in the atmosphere and hearing it, that's what freaked me out the most. Out of all the grossness that it was all throughout that, the weird sounds and stuff. No, it was that cat going,
That was creepy.
That was messed
man.
Up. That was
oh
messed
my god.
Well, one of the things that the remake cribs from the original story is that the second time she convinced him to go back through, that cat's atoms like join his atoms and he gets like real fucked up. That happens in the whole story. And so, you know, they kind of did that. Cause you know, like, weren't you thinking like he puts the cat and the plate so it's going to fuse with the plate? You're all Cronenberg on the brain when you're watching. It's impossible not to think about all the things that, that Cronenberg did when you're watching this old fly, but, that was so creepy because they don't ever follow up with that cat. It's just kind of like, but yeah, originally in the story, I think it was a lot of things the makeup department just flat out didn't want to do. They didn't want to do a progressive makeup. I know the actor wanted to do that guy that plays him, whatever his name, he's still alive. He's like ancient as hell. That's him with the head and everything. Like he was a super method actor. He wanted to do everything, but he said he campaigned to do a progressive, like deteriorating makeup. And they're like, we don't want to. Here's a blanket.
Yeah.
just a blanket is what you get, Goldblum.
Which is too bad because even though that would have been really cool, I always thought that just him rampaging around that lab with the towel over his head or whatever, that was spooky.
He had to do a lot because he didn't have that makeup. He did all the progression was in the performance, right? Because he started to slowly go insane, couldn't control his arm and shit.
Oh, the thing he did with his arm, I thought was awesome. How it started working independently. You know, he couldn't control the arm. Mm. It was being more
himself in the balls all the time.
Yeah.
Happy place.
You mentioned the towel over his head, which was really creepy. It almost gave me almost an Invisible Man type of vibe. Some of those scenes with him, but apparently Michael Rennie was offered the role but declined it because his head would be covered in most of the picture.
Oh, get over yourself, Michael Rennie. You know who else could eat shit? I'm sorry. Just for a second.
Go ahead.
What was everybody's big complaint about the Godzilla, that last Godzilla, whatever? How long it takes to see Godzilla?
Yeah.
How long it takes to see the fly for real in this movie? Anybody look at the clock?
About an hour?
A long time.
Yeah.
1 hour 14.
Yeah. The
movie's almost over when you see the monster.
Yeah, and this movie is not that long.
it's an hour and a half, something like that.
God, people just suck about monsters, man. Come on, this is a classic, and it took them an hour and 14. Y'all don't know shit.
It made it better. Sorry. It made it so much better.
It would have been. It might have been neat if it wasn't called The Fly, because then we would know what we. Because now we know what was going to be affected. Because it's kind of like when the first movie that you covered, Mark, for the thing,
right?
Everywhere else is called the Cronenberg Terror. Mm-hmm. Here it's called the Crawling Eye, so that you knew. When they finally showed the monster, it was going to be a crawling eye. No one else who saw this movie had any idea until this thing reached into the door and holy shit, it's a giant crawling eye. You know, that would have been like the same thing here if they called it something different besides the fly, if you can imagine that for an instant. You'd be like, but otherwise we're like, we know there's a fly under there.
You didn't have to though, because throughout the movie they were chasing a fly, and so I mean it could have been the story of them hunting down the poor innocent insect.
But you kind of knew that was well. Well, it's hard to say. It's hard to say. I don't know if anybody here saw this movie without having it spoiled for them over the years. I mean, I think I think that even if I hadn't seen that last scene before I saw the rest of the movie on another showing, I think that I had seen it covered on like Entertainment Tonight or some show back in the 80s where, you know, that thing was famous where they take the towel off and, you know,
that mouth was, God, it was a nasty mouth too.
It was a nasty mouth. And I thought the makeup for the mask, particularly actually was pretty damn good, you know, for 58.
Oh, yeah.
It's going, that actually looks, yeah, that looks like a, that actually looks really good and creepy.
Yeah. Part two, they made a head too big.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, how are you running from the cops with that 90 pound fucking noodle? And one of his legs is a fly leg also. You're like,
the film has a lot of actual creepy moments in it. You know, you would think 50s, it's like, oh, yeah, right. But you watch it, you're like, nah, this has got some legit creepy moments, especially besides the final scene, which, to me, I don't care which decade you're in, that's a freaking creepy ass scene.
That's really creepy.
That sound of the voice and everything, like if you've heard of it and stuff, it's still like, it's still unnerving. Like, I can't, dad thought it was funny, you know, like he thought that voice was funny and shit, but he also saw it when he was 8, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So you get older and you're all watching Dawn of the Dead and shit every night, you know, it's going to be kind of corny to you. But just that whole idea, I mean, forget the part how racist it is. They even had to make the fly's face white. You know?
Right.
But yeah, man. But it is frightening, you know, and it gets intense because, you know, like he's out there and people are actually thinking, man, well, there's a chance, right? Get that fly. Things might work out. What do y'all think? Would it really worked out?
Not after they put him in that hydraulic press.
No.
I'm talking about before that, homie. Oh, okay. I'm talking about if they would have got the fly.
That would have been, I could have seen that happening in this movie because movies, you used to be able to get away with huge leaps of logic, you know, that, where what are the chances of, well, it's in the movies, anything can happen, you know? So I could have seen that happening, but you're right about the noise. I mean, you hear, you know, people do the impression, you know, you used to hear Robin Williams used to do it all the time. Help me.
But it's way worse in the movie.
But when you hear it, it's like, you know, it's seeing the spider come in and hearing, no. The person just who has just been enduring hell and is now just reduced to the absolute terror of this. And this is not like just some guy who is prone to this. This is a very reserved and, you know, respected scientist, and now, oh my god, just the terror that is conveyed in that scene is astounding.
They add that little extra quiver to the voice too, and when the web shakes a little, it's like, holy crap, that it's like, man, that's actually a legit creepy scene.
In two, it's his son, right, growing up. And they do successfully trap the fly and him and put him back in the thing, and everything's cool. Like, it works out.
Yeah, I didn't like the sequel.
Hey, I'll tell you what, though, this part two is the only one that scared me.
Really?
Yeah, man. There's this scene. I just watched them like all yesterday, just to get back in the thing or whatever.
I watched all three of them like just a couple of years ago, most recently.
There's a part where, because he like goes on a rampage. It's neat to see what the remake and the sequel to the remake, what all they took from these old movies.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but part two, Return of the Fly, this scene where, like, because he goes out the lab, he just starts getting revenge on the motherfuckers that turned him in. Because one of his partners steals the technology and turns him into fly. It's dirty as shit. It ain't an accident. It's done on purpose, y'all. So, like, he's attacking the people that's involved. And there's one part where he's hiding in a like a mortuary or something, or like a funeral home. So there's all these coffins around, right? And you think, oh, it's gonna be so pimp. He's gonna pop out of a coffin and just 86 this guy. So they got the coffin in the shot, and instead he's behind the door. I jumped, man. I for real jumped. It was so scary. Like, even though it's like got that big bazooka head or whatever.
I agree. I agree with you, though. I agree with you, though, Andrew. The third sequel, Curse of the Fly, has a reputation of being this really awful, cheap, bad movie, and that movie is amazing. That film is awesome as hell.
Yeah, if we got time at the end, man, I got to tell you what's the plot of it. I mean, it's a trip. It's so good, but it is on Prime right now. It's just it's stretched out because they some asshole doesn't understand aspect ratio, but you can still. I mean, you could still dig it. It's good.
Cool.
There's no fly, but it's still good.
I actually haven't seen the two sequels yet, but now you guys got me interested, so I'll have to check those out later to see where they went with it. But yeah, I mean, this is an interesting film. I mean, it's a classic, but you know, I think it's not the film people might expect because they only know of it for maybe the last scene, but.
Yeah.
You know, there's some interesting character stuff they do in here. Personally, I really loved Patricia Owen's performance. It was, you know, there were parts where she kind of got scary, kind of like, you know, a Janet Leigh from Psycho type of feel, you know, this really kind of very, you know, confident, assertive, female from, you know, from a 50s show. And it's like, wow, it's like, that's an awesome character, you know, especially when she gets near the end where she finally has to off her husband and make him a pancake and turn his head into Malto meal. you know, I mean, she, the way she does that, I just loved her performance in this, but overall, I can see why people, you know, see it as a classic. You could see some really creepy stuff for something from the 50s in here.
Yeah, well, they build dread so well because they, you know, the whole movie how it's gonna end.
Yeah,
you're right, because they show you how gory, and so you got this whole buildup for that. But then they get that punch of that end that nobody could have, you know, back then seen coming, and people were been like, you know, I'm sure. That's why Dad remembered it all those years later. You know, because it's fucking freaky.
Ends on a freaky note that'll stick with you for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I asked my panel here to bring some questions for the group to discuss. I know not everyone may have one, but you can think about it. But I'm going to start with Paul first. Paul, do you have a topic or subject or something you wanted to discuss that we may not have talked about yet?
Yeah, we kind of hinted at it earlier, but I would like to kind of expand on the whole idea. Is there a place for a movie like this, the classic type of science fiction horror film, in modern day cinema with the current audiences that we have? Or is it going to have to be remake styles like Cronenberg, where we had to get like a Jeff Goldblum type of, you know, body disintegration? Can we have this style of classic film in modern day society?
Oh, I like that one. Scotty D?
I actually think so. I'm going to let the cynics sit aside for a second and say that this one would actually work today. And the reason why it would work is they go through such pains to explain how it would be possible. Mm-hmm. Whether it would actually be possible is beside the point. They go through such pains to explain it. Everybody needs a damn explanation these days. Mm-hmm. And it is not a... It can be done in a way where the audience, I think, would see it as kind of plausible. I think the type of movie you can't get away with these days, which is the part that makes me just weep, is that you can't have just a regular old monster movie. Mm-hmm. You can't have a movie where there's just a monster and he's like going out, you know, rampaging through the countryside. Well, what is he? He's a monster. Well, what made him a monster? I don't know. He's a monster. You know, he came from the ocean. Are there monsters in the ocean? I guess he's a monster. He came from the ocean. You know, you can't do that today. I think this one, because it does seem to have one foot planted so firmly in trying to create a plausible scientific scenario, this one I think would work still today.
Nice. Andrew, how about you?
Yeah, they could do it, but do horror fans deserve it? No, the answer is no.
Yeah.
They do not. They do not deserve it. I read that an opera was made about 10 years ago by Howard Shore. That would be what I would like to see, honestly, man. That would be really cool. Would horror fans be able to handle that? But no.
Why is that, Andrew? Do you think the sophistication of the horror fan or the standards of the horror fan has changed over the years?
For people that's a fan of fantasy, they got no goddamn imagination at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is definitely fanciful, but I think you could do it. I think it would be well received, especially, and I know I've mentioned this before, but I think people accepting a little more accepting depending on when you put it out. I could see this definitely as put out as a streaming or, you know, HBO type of film, or hell, even a little mini series.
A
5-minute series almost. But guys, at least
guys, enough. Just tell your story in an hour and a half. not everything has to be 8 to 12 hours long.
What? Yo, how about combine The Fly and Superfly?
Yeah,
that would be awesome. Oh my god, Fly Head plus Pimp Hat. Yes,
Fly Head plus Pimp Hat with the fly arm holding the cane. Hell yeah!
Ooh. Oh my god. He takes that little snout up there to sniff the coke. Oh yeah.
instead of Youngblood Priest, it would be like Bug Juice Priest. He takes down the whole thing, man.
Oh man, copyright Spoiler Room 2018. Yeah. There we go. We'll copyright that out there right now. Yeah. Super Fly.
Nah, Super the Fly.
Super the Fly.
Yeah.
The Fly Super Fly. Wow. Now I want to see that movie. Thanks. Wow. Okay. What about you, Paul?
Do you think it could be made? I think it could be made, but I don't think it would be received as well. I mean, we had Mother, we had Crimson Peak come out recently, and those were very, in my mind, a very kind of like classical type of horror type of thing, and they didn't receive it. You know, the audience didn't get it as much as I think they should have gotten it and should have enjoyed it. So I think they could be made, but I don't think I think we already said it. The audience, some of the audience nowadays, don't deserve this type of film.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds kind of pretentious a little bit, but you're true. It's true. It's foreseeing what becomes popular in the horror genre, or what's considered really good in the horror genre nowadays. And you look at that and go, you know, as our good friend Derek Carey would say, baby horror. In many ways, it is, you know, yeah, if they came out with something like this, it would probably not be received well, especially if they executed it with a little bit more, headier flair, no pun intended, you know, versus a lowest common denominator approach to it. Yeah, so that's a good question. I like that, Paul. What about you, Andrew? Did you have a question or something that we didn't mention yet that you may want to talk about?
I just got a question for the panel.
Sure, go ahead.
All right, so you don't have a choice. You went through the teleporter. You got fused with an animal or an object. And that shit is now your head in your hand. Pick, what do you want?
Ooh, Paul.
Panda.
Panda?
Panda. I've always loved pandas. I've grew up pandas. There's a book that I grew up with called Panda Cake, and I've loved pandas ever since. So panda bear, shove me in there with a panda bear.
Yeah, but you got to remember now there's going to be some panda somewhere with a paw head in hand. Just think about that, though.
That entirely good. Feed it bamboo.
Still don't change your mind? Okay.
It doesn't change my mind. I'd be panda. Panda head.
All right.
Panda arm, too.
Sulzer one half. Yeah.
Yeah.
Paul one half. There you go. Scotty D, how about you?
Dragon.
Ooh.
Look out, world.
Would you be able to stand, though, with a dragon head and arm, though? I think your body would topple over, though.
We don't know what this would be. Like how is this gonna be, like, you know, Dragon Slayer Dragon, or was this gonna be,
yeah,
like, you know, personally? Personally, I could take any kind of dragon you want. If you want to make it like a big, like, if you want to make it like a J.R.R. Tolkien dragon, that's time too. if you want to just go cute, Pete's dragon was awesome. So,
how about like an Asian dragon, like a serpent type of dragon that goes through the air?
Yeah, something where, you know, it's, you either say, oh, that's cute, or, oh, he's gonna fuck us up.
Nice.
Oh man, you know, I'm not sure what I want to be combined with.
Now you got to keep in mind though, and you there's another one.
Yes,
you just have like the opposite, man. Just like, you know what I'm saying, you can be that one. Like if you wanted to be with pandas instead of people, you'd be like, all right, well, I want the head and hand of a panda, but really it's gonna be me out in the, you know, eating the bamboo somewhere with the other pandas and shit, who will kill you immediately because they don't recognize you. Yeah. P.S.
Pandas in the mist, baby. Pandas in the mist.
Yeah, they'd be like, the fuck is this? Is it our king? No, it's our dinner.
Oh, man. I don't
Make
know.
Me a panda cake.
A snake?
Ooh.
Snakes. Snake would be interesting.
Well, how are you going to do the, how's, okay, that's interesting. How are you going to do the one hand has like an arm or something then?
You wouldn't. That's the thing.
He's cheating.
You're just going to be like Thulsa Doom?
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. Come up like a naga with.
Yeah, I'd like a snake. That'd be cool. It'd be different. I mean, it's either that or a spider, you know.
Ooh.
But you only get one arm. But the other half of you would get like, you know, eight arms.
So spider that, mark. Spider mark.
Spider mark. Yeah.
Fuck.
What?
These answers just getting like progressively more horrifying. I did not think anybody would want a spider. I didn't think anybody would go insect. God damn.
Yeah, spider, man. Yeah, be kind of like the Scorpion King, only better CGI.
It would have to be. It would have to be.
You know, you could always do bear, and then you could have the bear head, the bear arm, and that's cool. And for the part of you that has the human head and the human arm, you could just, like, you know, scare a bunch of rednecks and be like, Bigfoot, you know.
Or they didn't want to have sex with you, so that might backfire.
Oh, my God, We have politicians that are ready to do that.
For real.
What about you, Andrew?
Oh, it's easy as hell, man. I would be Kelly Bundy.
Yeah.
See, you know what, Andrew? I'm gonna be completely honest with you. I almost responded with a female character, but I was like, I don't know.
I don't think there's any question that Kelly Bundy would be the best.
Hell yeah.
I mean, we would just be either one of them. Take your pick.
You'd be fucking BFFs. You'd
be the cat's pajamas either way.
You both would be BFFs with each other, so.
Yeah, I mean, at the first, it might be a little Frankenhookery. You know,
I was gonna say this sounds like the end of Farrington Hooker,
but only for a second. You know.
Yeah.
Granted, what we did would be a bit unorthodox, but hey.
Best of both worlds. There you go.
Yeah.
Wow, that's an awesome question. Now I'm picturing this. Now I'm picturing this. So. Yeah, I'll see you guys later. No, never mind.
You're welcome. Welcome.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks. You gave me something for my dreams tonight, that's for sure.
Hey, no problem, homie.
Wait, was Kelly the mother or the daughter?
What,
daughter.
Seriously?
The daughter, but dude. I would do Peg Bundy, too. I mean,
Peg, that's her name, okay.
Freaking yeah. Christina Applegate. How do you even ask that question, man?
Well, it's legit, man. I honestly
thought you would have loved the hair.
Yeah, nah, for real, I would take either one. It don't matter. No, I just, you know, I don't like her food option as much, like, you know, because Marilyn Peg was like cooking one M&M. Al was cooking it and she came in and ate it. That's what happened.
Yeah,
she
came in and ate it. Goddamn. Anyways. Either one. Did I break the show with that question?
No, I don't know now because my brain's running on other things and it shouldn't be right now. No, it's okay. Scotty D, I know you said you didn't, but do you have something after our talk here?
Honestly, my question actually, Andrew kind of touched on it. It was going to be about the opera and what people would have thought. You know, the one thing where we never did get to see it, because I don't even know if it was staged in the United States. I think it was just in Europe, but Howard Shore, who did the music for, you know, longtime Cronenberg collaborator and did the music for The Fly, 1986 version, the opera. Can you imagine what that would have been like or anything? That was basically what mine would have been, but it's already been kind of touched on a little bit.
Well, I know they had special effects, like, in it and stuff. Like, I know it was mostly based, yeah, on the movie, the remake, rather than the original. But I don't know very much about... I haven't even seen a picture from it. I don't know. Oh, I'd love to Google that.
There's pictures all over the internet. It looks creepy as fuck.
Awesome, man. I'll have to look at that.
Dude,
I remember doing a story, writing the story on that when we were... when I was editing Horror Express back in the day. I wrote this thing like The Fly, the opera. And I was like, what? And I actually like opera. So I thought that sounds bizarre. I can't wait to see that.
I totally would watch this. This looks freaking awesome.
It does look good.
Are you Googling while you're supposed to be hosting this show?
I'm Googling and hosting both. I can multitask.
I'm watching porn. Just kidding.
After that Kelly Bundy comment, man.
Oh, yeah.
It's that Kelly Bundy comment.
I'm taking responsibility.
Children, Paul, after the show, if you really want that. There you go.
Okay.
but no, The Fly Opera, I'd pay money for that. Shit, yeah.
Yeah, it looks amazing.
I would definitely pay money for that. Even if I hadn't seen it, I'd watch it because, you know, I'd be curious to see how it would be, you know? Yeah, and
just knowing that it exists. You know, like to me is great, but, you know, there's no Fly 3, right?
Right.
So there needs to be, because original is a trilogy. You know, The Curse of the Fly takes place kind of in the future, and it's his grandson that has perfected teleporting ish. But he also has this degenerative disease. So.
Dun dun dun.
There you go, Cronenberg. Yeah. If you're listening to this, make your sequel, your third movie. Damn it. We want another Fly film, and use practical effects too. Screw that CGI.
Or just make it animated.
Man, Leica, right? How about that?
Oh, dude, stop motion animate. Oh man, stop motion animation, modern Fly film. Wow.
Yeah. Kubo and the two teeth he has left.
We got a lot of great ideas coming out of this podcast tonight.
Copyright
Spoiler Room 2018. There you go.
Shit.
Come talk to us, and if you need a director, talk to Andrew, because he would direct the shit out of that.
Oh, I appreciate that, but I don't know if I'm up to it, man. This it doesn't need to be in my hands, because I mean, if Christina Applegate's not interested, I have to say I'm not either.
Dude, that'd be interesting, wouldn't it? What would you guys think of that? A female Fly, because from what you guys were talking about, the three, and I hadn't seen them. I hadn't seen this two sequels to this film. It all sounds like it's dealt with the sons, but I guess my final question for the night to you guys is: what would you think, or how do you think it would be handled with a female as the Fly?
And I got my hand up for the Fly girls to be the stars, all of them.
Oh, yeah.
I'd watch it. They all, it's like a battalion of Fly girls.
Man. Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah, I would just settle for Invasion of the V girls. That's it.
Scott's like,
they didn't have those shorts, though.
No, they didn't. But Scotty D's like, I don't need no Fly women. I got my B girls.
The B-Girls fan.
Yeah.
Just imagine that, though, man. Somebody, like, rigs their tour bus to be the teleporter, and they're like, oh, you know, we can't get to Europe for the other leg of our tour in time. We're going to use this experimental technology. Oh, shit, a Fly gets in.
And they all, each one of them has, like, different body part from the Fly. So,
or they look exactly the same, but they throw up on dudes all the time.
To disintegrate them and then eat up what they disintegrated. There you go.
I prefer the marshmallow Fly.
Paul's like, this is getting too disturbing now.
Yeah.
women puking on guys, dissolving them, and then eating them. Yeah, you know
that costs extra.
Yeah. None of this has made me not want to see it. So
sorry. Well, you're the one that said though that they regurgitate on guys. So I don't know,
because I saw a burlesque act based on the Fly.
Oh, did you really? She,
Oh, yeah, man. Anybody see my movie Pajama Nightmare?
Yeah.
Okay, so Major Honeys, who's one of the twins, it's Coquette du Jour and her. Oh, she wasn't the one that did it. I'm sorry. It was a different one. Yeah, she did an act where she comes out, she strips, but she's got the fly head the whole time. And at the end, she barfs.
Wow.
She has a liquid in her mouth the whole act, takes off her clothes, leaves the giant fly head, and then, yeah, bleh. So it's like a combination of the Cronenberg and this one. Pretty rad, dude.
That is rad. That is awesome. I'll tell you,
I forgot the performance stage name. I know her personally, her real name, but it's not the one from Pajama Nightmare. That,
right.
What her name was.
That's awesome. Yeah, and it shows you the impact of this film has had on people and on filmmakers since it came out. And we'll wrap it up tonight with what we normally do for our It Came from the 50s series. I ask my panel what they were taught from the 1958 classic The Fly. We'll start with Scott. Mr. Scott Davis, what's one thing the 1958 Fly taught you?
I have an irrational fear of hydraulic presses. That's what it taught me.
Oh, there's this YouTube channel you don't want to watch.
Yeah. Crush everything in a hydraulic press. It's, and then play it back at like 10,000 speed slow. Yeah, it's insane. Paul, how about you? What's one thing you learned?
Oof, that science really has some wonderful things, but can be bad as well. So be careful with what you meddle with, because you never know. You could come out with a fly head.
Nice.
Yeah.
Andrew, how about you, sir?
I learned that houses in the 50s were built so good that you could have a science lab in the basement with the loudest ass machine humanly possible and don't nobody upstairs ever hear it.
Oh, yeah.
That shit sounded like an aluminum truck exploded inside an aluminum plant.
Aluminium.
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 And dispersed all the animules.
That sounds like a plot of an anime. I love it.
But you know what I'm saying? Like that thing was like clang clang in the middle of the night.
I know.
Everybody's just, you know, nobody. Anyways.
And I learned that Vincent Price plays yet another character. And you learned that no matter how badly your brother died, it still doesn't change you having the hots for his wife.
Yeah.
About that jacket. I don't think I'd be worried about him in that jacket.
That jacket. He wore the same damn jacket throughout the entire movie. It's like,
hey, man, you were worried about Francois and your wife? First of all, his name is Francois. Second of all, have you seen his smoking jacket?
Mm-hmm. You see the smoking jacket, you know you have no worries with his wife.
But I would love to go to a movie with Vincent Primer at the end. He's like, hey, you want to go to the movies so you don't see your mom get like beaten up by the paramedics and poop in her pants and stuff?
Yeah.
Dude, what are we going to go see? How about we go see 13 Ghosts, brother?
Nice. Well, I thank my panel for this fun discussion about this classic film starring Mr. Vincent Price once again. Gee, another monster feature featuring Mr. Price. Go figure. What a surprise there. So now is the chance when all these fine folks can tell you a little bit about where you can find their stuff at when they're not here with gracing us with their presence. So the lovely Andrew Shearer, go first, sir. Where can they find your stuff at, sir?
Please, for the love of all that is fly, visit Amazon.com/V as in Vincent Price/gonzorific, GONZORIFFIC. That's my friends and I. We make movies here in Athens, Georgia. We don't have any money. We just do it because we love it, but we get 6 cents for every hour you stream our movies, and we really want to buy a pizza next time we make one.
Oh, shit, I'll just make a playlist and put your shit on loop, dude.
You know, okay. People are doing that for me, and thank you very, very much. Our movie that we are currently in post-production on is called Vincent Price's Skull, and if you'd like to see the teaser trailer, visit our YouTube page. Just look for Gonzorific, G-O-N-Z-O-R-I-F-F-I-C. This movie got a lot of bikinis in it, man.
Fantastic. And Mr. Paul Salzer,
I'd like to tell everybody about the Northeast Wisconsin Horror Film Festival. Tonight we're just doing our final selections. All of our judges are fine, wonderful judges from various diverse like occupations and things about movies. They've gone in and they've looked at all of our films and they've made their final selections. And now what we're going to do is we're going to tally up all the votes and we're going to have a wonderful, wonderful film festival. It's our third year. It's going to be in the second weekend of October, and all of the proceeds again will go to the Time Theater in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, which is a historic theater, and it's a wonderful venue. And I recommend everybody come to it. If you want to find out more about it, go to newhorrorfest.com.
Fantastic. And Scotty D, I know it's been a while, but you do still have stuff out there.
It's out there. It's not getting added to at the moment, but it's out there. It's you can go check out all my writings and scribblings at movieocrity.com. You can also check out my web series, Movieocrity, at vimeo.com/channels/movieocrity. People would often comment on them and say, how do you not have a million different subscribers? And you know what? I'm stumped too. So there it is. Go get them.
The internet is a fickle mistress.
It sucks.
I can feel you. I can feel you. Definitely. So check out all these fine folks' stuff. Please, thank you so much for listening to our podcast tonight. And I think we'll just say, help me. Let's all give our own best help me. 1, 2, 3. Go ahead. Give your best help me.
What a world.
What a world. Oh, help me. For only $9.95 an hour, you can help me.
I want
on
a
Patreon.
World.
Yeah.
Hey, all my friends out there looking for more Spoiler Room goodness, then why don't you check out our brand new Patreon page, patreon.com/specialmarkproductions, where you can get access to exclusive Spoiler Room episodes and a whole lot more. You can also find us on Facebook groups at SMPRD and on to Twitter at Special Mark Pro. Let your voice be heard and let us know what you would like to see in the Spoiler Room, as well as just how we're doing in general. We appreciate your support, and remember, in the Spoiler Room, the conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies.